Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast. My friends at MyPillow, my buddy Mike Lindell told me he was coming out with a brand new product. It's called the new mattress topper. So I got the new mattress topper immediately, and I've been sleeping on it now for a couple of months. It's the best thing you've ever felt in your life. Now, you literally have MyPillow foam for support. It's a transitional foam that helps relieve pressure points, and it's ultra-soft, patented temperature-regulating cover. And I got to tell you, it has a 10-year warranty, a cover that's washable and dryable. It's made in the USA, backed by their 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee. Once you try this new mattress topper, you put it right over your mattress, you will never sleep better. And right now, you, my radio listeners, you're going to save 30% off when you go to MyPillow.com and use the promo code TOPPER. And by the way, Mike will also give you two standard MyPillows absolutely free. All right, so try MyPillow.com, promo code TOPPER. Promo code TOPPER for this great deal and the best night's sleep you ever had. All right, glad you're with us. 800-941-SEAN if you want to be a part of the program. As we speak, our friends in Florida and the Florida Panhandle and Panama City Beach are now in the midst of what is the single worst hurricane ever to hit the Panhandle. National Weather Service, worst case scenario for Florida. Look, it's literally a Category 4 making landfall and maybe even a Cat 5, borderline Cat 5 hurricane, 175-mile gusting winds at the time. And I got to tell you, this is as bad as it could have possibly worked out as it comes in. The governor of Florida is telling everybody that everything is pre-positioned, food, water, medicine, supplies, cots, blankets, pillows, baby formula, everything that everybody's going to need. And literally some of the wind gusting now in and around the whole Panhandle is very, very dangerous. If you didn't get out, if you didn't listen and you're hearing my voice, make sure you bunker down. These are winds that can knock buildings down. So it is a worst case scenario for our friends in the Panhandle. You know, that's Pensacola, Destin, Panama City Beach, and all throughout the Panhandle. Hurricane Michael now with these amazing Category 4 winds, Cat 4, making landfall as we speak. National Weather Service is advising stay inside and survive. When it passes, help will be on its way. The president, the governor, Rick Scott, you know, everything's been pre-positioned. There's not much anybody can do right now. So hunker down, get in the safest place you can, and hopefully ride this thing out and survive this. I know a lot of you are going to be experiencing a lot of property damage, loss when you get back to your homes. Those of you that heeded the warnings to evacuate, the rainfall situation itself, there's going to be a lot of flooding that it's going to be occurring now and through tomorrow, and rising waters and tides, et cetera, which is all part of it. This hurricane also is taking on an enormous amount of power. It came in. Most hurricanes usually slow down before they actually hit land. This one came in full force, as was predicted by our own Joe Bastardi, who's going to join us at the bottom of this half hour, and actually is going to sustain a lot of its power. It's going to make a northeasterly turn. It'll be a little south of Atlanta. Atlanta's not going to get the brunt of this at some point tomorrow, but Augusta is going to be hit really, really hard. So draw a line from Panama City Beach, Florida, straight to Augusta, Georgia. And if you're in any of those surrounding areas, you're right in line of the path of Hurricane Michael. And it's moving at a pretty rapid pace, which means that'll be there sometime tomorrow and then make its way up the coast through Columbia, South Carolina, into North Carolina. And then we expect at that point it's probably going to go out to sea a little bit. But the bottom line is this is a Cat 4, borderline Cat 5 hurricane, and the strongest one ever to reach the Gulf Coast area there and the Panhandle area. And on top of it, we got catastrophic storm surge, these destructive wind gusts, 175 miles per hour and even higher. Over a million power outages we expect occurring, and not just near the coast, but also inland after. Now this is hitting as we speak. Rainfall flooding is going to be a significant threat into the Carolinas. So everybody, if you're in if you're in Georgia, if you're in South Carolina, if you're in North Carolina, you know, you can make your preparations now. And I would listen to local authorities. If they're telling you to get out, get out. And you can come back, take whatever important pictures, valuables you need to take with you, pack the car, move inland, and protect your family. And, you know, our thoughts and prayers are with everybody in harm's way today. This is the real deal. This is, you know, Florida governor scared to death for those who stayed. This is why, you know, at times they make predictions. They tell you to leave, and it's not as bad as they say it's going to be. This is one of those times it's as bad or worse than they predicted it's going to be. The worst hurricane ever for the panhandle in Florida. That's how dangerous this is. As it goes inland, we're talking about in Augusta, Georgia, you're going to be having 80 to 100 mile an hour winds tomorrow. Same thing as you head up to Columbia, South Carolina, into North Carolina. So a lot of bad stuff happening. Our thoughts and prayers are with everybody. And just know help will be on the way. We live in the greatest country on earth with the most generous people on earth. And whatever our friends in Florida, Georgia, the Carolinas are going to need, I know that people will be there to help in any way imaginable. We have some breaking news on the deep state as it relates to Rod Rosenstein. Now, this is really outrageous. Rod Rosenstein, now think of everything that he's involved in. Think of how conflicted he has been as it relates to all things deep state that we have been telling you about now for a year and a half. He is the person in May of 2017 recommending the firing of Jim Comey. He is the guy that appointed special counsel Robert Mueller. He is the guy that signed the third FISA renewal, the fourth FISA application to spy on the Trump campaign associate Carter Page. The bulk of the information in the FISA warrants, as we all know now, were the Hillary Clinton bought and paid for phony Russian dossier that even its author, Christopher Steele, doesn't stand by. And of course, that was funneled money. It was made to look like a legal expense when, in fact, it was anything but a legal expense. Now, he was now supposed to testify because three people now, Lisa Page, Andrew McCabe, the former deputy FBI director, and James Baker. Again, we just learned this, you know, this week. James Baker, now the third person, are all saying that Rod Rosenstein talked at length about surreptitiously going into the Oval Office, taping the President of the United States. By the way, that would be without a warrant. And then hoping he can get some information, something from the president that could then ignite or start the process of invoking the 25th Amendment to remove the president from office. Now, he's denying it, said he was being sarcastic, said he was joking about it. But the testimony of Lisa Page, Andrew McCabe, and James Baker all contradict what Rod Rosenstein is now saying. Well, Rod Rosenstein was scheduled to testify tomorrow to the House Judiciary Committee. But unfortunately, at this hour, they're at an impasse. And the impasse is over the terms of the testimony. Because lawmakers are calling for what is the standard congressional task force interview and insisting that Rod Rosenstein give a transcribed interview and that the interview be under oath. He's refusing to do so. And those close to Rosenstein say they prefer a meeting, and I'm sure they do, or a briefing with the House Judiciary Committee chairman and other lawmakers. They don't want any paper trail. They don't want to be under oath at all. Now, the House Judiciary Committee aide said on Wednesday they left the door open for a possible resolution. There should be no resolution. The resolution is to subpoena Rod Rosenstein and have him testify under oath. Did he or did he not? As Lisa Page, as Andrew McCabe, and as James Baker are all saying, did he or did he not talk about wearing a wire against the president in the hope of getting something he says to help invoke the 25th Amendment? Either he did it or he didn't do it. And then we can also talk about why he signed the fourth and final FISA warrant application as it relates to Carter Page. Why did he sign off on a document? He himself talked about, well, with regards to FISA warrants, you know, that is an affidavit, and career law enforcement swears to the validity, the truthfulness, and if they're wrong, there's consequences. Well, we all know the bulk of the FISA applications, including the last one. If there's one that shouldn't have been signed, by that point, they knew Hillary paid for it. They knew the DNC paid for it. They knew it was full of uncorroborated, unverified information. We're now 9 months into surveilling Carter Page. By then, you'd think they would have figured out that the dossier was phony and made up, and even its own author couldn't prove any of its contents. And when questioned in an interrogatory in Great Britain, said, I don't know if any of this is true. It's just raw intelligence and people just saying things like two hookers urinating in a bed in front of Donald Trump in Moscow in the Ritz-Carlton. Well, nobody ever verified that or corroborated that. And it is, if you're going to get an affidavit, it is the law, especially a FISA application, a FISA warrant and protocol, that you verified the contents and the information you're presenting to a court. And you don't purposely withhold information, pertinent information, like the fact that Hillary Clinton bought and paid for that phony dossier that you didn't take the time to verify or corroborate, because obviously they all hated Donald Trump, because remember, Strzok was the one that said, well, first he could smell the Trump voters in a Walmart, but also said that Hillary should win 100 million to zero. And then you can add to that the insurance policy comment that he made. And what you really have here is, I think, now the validation or the corroboration of what the insurance policy was. Insurance policy is that you have people conspiring. Not only, remember, Lisa Page testified, as we head into May, 9 months into the investigation into so-called Trump-Russia collusion, by the very same people that gave Hillary Clinton a pass on the biggest obstruction of justice case in history. Then they go into the Trump-Russia so-called investigation. Lisa Page confirms that they had no information. Peter Strzok's text confirmed that there's no there there. But anyway, then they start a media leak strategy, all coming from the same source, which is Hillary's bought and paid for dossier. They get their willing accomplices in the media to spread their lies and propaganda from the dossier. And it creates an atmosphere where an impression is being created that, whoa, there really is something going on here. And then it's used by the very same people, the phony information that they spread, to whip up hysteria so that they can go forward after the firing of Comey on the 9th of May in 2017. Then they appoint Rod Rosenstein goes out and appoints his buddy Robert Mueller. But there was no evidence at all, according to Lisa Page, that there was any reason to open a special counsel investigation. The whole house of cards, the corruption, the silent coup is now exposed. No wonder Rod Rosenstein doesn't want to speak to the Senate Judiciary Committee, the House Judiciary Committee. No wonder. Why would he? Especially under oath, where then he could be charged with lying under oath. You know, and people worry about that. Just ask Papadopoulos or General Flynn. All right, we have a lot of information we're going to get to. We have a Rasmussen poll out today. Republicans tied with the Democrats on the generic ballot. That is huge. We have more information, specific information of just how radical the Democratic Party's agenda is if they ever get back power in 27 days. We have in Arizona, McSally, thankfully, has taken the lead in that close Senate race out there. She's really an American war hero. And anyway, I think we're seeing a lot of movement in Missouri in favor of the Republican candidates. A lot of movement. Heidi Heitkamp is in trouble in North Dakota. Joe Donnelly's in trouble in Indiana. Bill Nelson needs to be defeated by Rick Scott, who I love in Florida, but Rick Scott can't be campaigning. He's now taking care of the people in the panhandle. And other important races that we're watching as well. We'll get to all of that. Joe Bastardi on Hurricane Michael. That is also coming up today in the course of the program.
With only a kite, a house key, and wet hemp string, Benjamin Franklin captured lightning in a bottle. Over 260 years later, with a little resourcefulness, ingenuity, and grit, we're not only capturing energy from the sun and wind, we're storing it, ensuring Americans have the energy they need whenever they need it. Learn more about the nation's leader in energy storage at NextEraEnergy.com.
All right, as we roll along, Sean Hannity Show, 800-941-SEAN. Good news, polling operation Rasmussen. By the way, they had the best accuracy record in 2016 in the presidential election when so many others were wrong. Now saying that Republicans are tied with Democrats on the 2018 generic ballot. Latest Rasmussen survey, 45% of likely voters would choose a Democratic candidate if the elections for Congress were held today. Another 45% opt for the Republicans. 3% prefer another candidate. Now, that's a five-point recent improvement for the GOP. But if you go back at this time in 2014, prior to the last non-presidential year congressional election, Democrats had a 41-39 lead, but Republicans went on to win 9 Senate seats and increase their majority in the House. What that means, if I can interpret for you, it means that in 27 days, we the people have the opportunity to shock the world again and not reward the outrageous behavior of the entire Democratic Party establishment in the last 2 years and more recently with Judge Kavanaugh. And by the way, another sign that Chuck Schumer's anti-Kavanaugh strategy was a public relations disaster. Another poll finds, Rasmussen, that Republicans are more angry about the Kavanaugh controversy than Democrats and more determined to vote in the upcoming election because of it. New Rasmussen poll shows that 62% of Republicans are more likely to vote because of what the Democrats did to Judge Kavanaugh compared to 54% of Democrats. That is a good sign for 27 days. And on top of that, Democrats keep, every time they open their mouth and they expose what their real agenda is, it's investigation, it's impeachment, it's take the crumbs back and eliminate the tax cuts that have been helping the economy so much. And of course, they want to keep Obamacare and actually, quote, strengthen it. In other words, make it worse. And on top of all of that, eliminating ICE and open borders. There's a lot at stake. All right, when we come back, a Category 4 hurricane landing, 155-mile-per-hour winds in the panhandle of Florida. Joe Bastardi, WeatherBell.com, he'll join us and he'll give us the latest. Mark Meadows and Jim Jordan on the issue of whether Rod Rosenstein will testify. Greg Jarrett, Dan Bongino, much more all coming up. Stay with us.
Do you have opinions that you feel you can't express? I think we all do. Are you looking for a place to stir up conversation and let your opinions be heard? I want to introduce you to a new alternative social media site, Snippy.com. Snippy is an unbiased social media platform that's all about conversation and community. Snippy not only encourages freedom of expression, but guarantees its users the ability to discuss topics freely, without any suppression from administrators. Check in for a quick update about current events, or spend hours scrolling through users' posts. Write your thoughts and strike up conversation. Snippy's founders have intentionally created a forum where anyone can feel free to express their thoughts, frustrations, ideas, anything really. It's a place where discussion is valued, a place where your opinion matters, totally free. Go to snippy.com now to express yourself. No shadow banning, no character limit, and no suppression of conservative thought, ever. Check out the website at snippy.com or download the app. No censorship, no agenda. Join us at Snippy to get the discussion rolling.
All right, 25 now till the top of the hour, 800-941-SHAWN. If you want to be a part of the program as we speak, we have a Category 4, borderline really Category 5 hurricane now slamming the panhandle of Florida, Panama City, exactly where we told you it was going to hit. We have gusts of 175, 80 miles per hour, storm surge up to 30 feet, and the center is hitting hard and furious and fast, just as Joe Bastardi predicted since Sunday in his forecast and on this program yesterday. And he joins us now from WeatherBell.com, the official meteorologist of the Sean Hannity Show. Everything you said and more, Cat 4, maybe borderline Cat 5?
Yeah, at landfall. Now it's inland now, 30 to 40 miles. And we want to give you some the track of this is going to be very right through middle Georgia, very close to Macon, Warner, Robins. About 2 a.m. this morning, near Augusta tomorrow morning, and near and south of the track, for instance, it looks like wind gusts are going to be to 100 to 120 miles an hour in southwest Georgia, probably 75 to 100 miles an hour in middle Georgia. Around the Augusta area, the strongest winds are probably going to be between 60 and 80 miles an hour near and southeast of Augusta. And in Columbia, I'd say 55 to 75 near and southeast of there. So the track of this by tomorrow night will take it probably north of Fayetteville, North Carolina, and then 2 a.m. in the morning, it reaches the Elizabeth City, North Carolina, and then it goes out. So that's how we're expecting this to move over the next 24 to 36 hours. And so it's going to be moving pretty quickly through a lot of these areas.
Well, let me go through this a little bit more. First of all, I mean, the governor's saying, I hope to God that nobody stayed and people evacuated on the coast. I'm not so sure that that's the case. I mean, I'm looking at some of these images, and it's downright scary. Flooding has already occurred in some of these coastal areas. But these are the types of winds that could blow down houses, correct, and structures.
Yeah, I suspect you're not seeing any video coming in from where this made landfall. Because, I mean, it's one thing, for instance, if Pensacola is on the west side of this in Mobile, Pensacola has had winds out of the north 40 gusts into 60, but it's blowing out. So it's at Panama City area, Port St. Joe. That's the area where it's ground zero, and that if you told me structures, and I'm not just talking about a small structure, I'm talking about Camille took apartment buildings out along the beach. So
they're saying this storm, Joe, is the most powerful on record to ever hit the Florida Panhandle.
Right, between Mobile and Tampa, this is the most powerful on record. That also goes west to Mobile. Now, Camille, once you get west of Mobile, you get Camille in there, about Paz Christian and those places. That Camille's a benchmark storm there. And Donna and Charlie down south of Tampa are the benchmark storms there. Of course, Andrew in Miami there. 1926 was a bad storm along the coast, but it was only a Category 3 up near Pensacola. Now, this is the worst storm. Now, when we get – look, folks, to the east of the track, severe weather, tornadoes are going to break out tonight into tomorrow, and we're talking southern and eastern
Georgia.
When
you say east of the track, you're talking now about Georgia, but it's going to be a little south of Atlanta, a direct kind of hit at 80, 100 miles an hour, I'm guessing, into Augusta?
Well, no, I think Augusta is 60 to 80, maybe 90 miles an hour. It'll back off by then. Macon, like I said, may get gusts as high as that. Southwest Georgia, where it's going to be entering in a couple of hours, they're going to be seeing winds 100, 120 miles an hour and gusts in there. I mean, that's phenomenal, because you got to understand, folks, as powerful as these things are, when they get inland, frictional effects, it's almost like if you're running a 9-1 sprint, 9-1 100-yard dash, if you tweak your hamstring, you can't run that fast. If you really pull it, you can't run at all. Well, these things are perfect machines. But once they get inland, the frictional effects, the fact that they're moving away from the source of energy, the water, they wind down. But we're talking about a relative winding down. How many times does Augusta, Georgia get winds to near hurricane force from a storm that has hit all the way down close to 300 miles or 250 miles to the southwest? But the tornadic activity, we got to make sure we cover for that. Eastern Georgia, eastern South Carolina, eastern North Carolina. These tornadoes, as a storm winds down in the low levels, still very strong in the upper levels. So what happens is that discrepancy creates these vortices, these F1s, F2s. And so you get these higher gusts with that, and you have tornadoes. It wouldn't be surprising me if there are a couple dozen tornadoes tonight into tomorrow in the areas south and east. And so the rainfall, I'm sorry, I'm just spouting this information out. It's like there's so much coming in, and I can't get it out here. The rainfall, 3 to 6, locally 12 inches from where we are in Georgia, Florida and Georgia now, but through South Carolina, through North Carolina, and a lot of that area that was devastated by Florence, the coastal areas probably aren't going to get it as bad. They are going to get pretty strong wind gusts in there, but this is just inland until we get to Elizabeth City. And you folks in Tidewater, very late tomorrow night and on into Friday morning, you're going to get north winds coming in there 60, gusting to 70 miles an hour right down Chesapeake Bay. Because as this reaches the coast and those same frictional effects I'm talking about over land diminish, the storm will wrap back up again and then go out to sea and stay. I mean, there'll be a nor'easter from D.C. to Boston.
Tell me exactly, what are the areas that may have tornado activity exactly, so people can make preparations and be ready?
Well, south and east of a path, let's say, from Columbus, Georgia to Greenville, Spartanburg, I think, to Raleigh, Durham, to the Tidewater of Virginia. you live south and east of that path, and the further south and east you go, the more you have to watch out for that. And you're going to see tornado watches and warnings be put into effect in those areas. And over the next several hours, I believe they'll start putting that out in there if they haven't already. I'm sure there's tornado watches up now. I'm just trying to look at the forecast map going forward to tomorrow and on into Friday.
Yeah. All right. Now, I want to just go through this very, very slowly. It's about 30 miles inland now as it pounded hard the panhandle of Florida, and it's now moving northeast. And as it moves northeast, it's going to first hit Macon, Georgia, 100, 120 mile an hour winds possible for there through Augusta.
Well, 100 to 120 southwest Georgia, Macon 80 to 100 in that
okay,
area.
Okay, Macon, I'm sorry.
Gust.
And
yes.
then making its way through Augusta, and then it'll go up the northeast coast to the Carolinas, I guess through the tip, Columbia, through the rest of the coastal South Carolina area, and then into North Carolina.
Right, and it'll be near Elizabeth City, 2 a.m. in the morning on Friday, and then about 100 miles east of Norfolk in the morning, 7 a.m., 8 a.m., and then on out to sea. And a glancing blow, it'd be like a nor'easter for 3 to 6, maybe 8 hours, New Jersey on into southeast New England out of this. And
okay,
then this is the last one, Sean, so you don't have to worry
How
about
do you know it's the last one? That fascinates me that you said it's the last one. This isn't going to happen for the rest of the year.
Well, we knew back in September that we were going to have one come up out of the Caribbean because it's the overall pattern. And I'll tell you what, folks, we've been in the east. This is 2002 all over again, except Lily, which was the big hurricane in the Gulf, hit a little bit earlier in Louisiana in October. But we had all the warm weather in the east, September and October. This is pointing the way, believe it or not, the pattern recognition toward the winter season, which I think it's going to be a big winter for much of the United States this year. There's certain types of patterns that set up. So it's going to get much, much cooler across the eastern part of the United States in the wake of this storm. That will then establish it. We may see something that tries to develop but most likely stay offshore before it's all said and done. But impact storms on the United States, this is the last one, in my opinion.
Joe Bastardi, you're helping to save people's lives, and you help every day. You nailed this with exact pinpoint perfection and accuracy, which is so vital for people to make proper decisions about whether to stay or go. Thank you for being with us. We really appreciate it. We'll get back to you later in the program
today.
Thank
you for having me, Sean.
All right, 800-941-SEAN, if you want to be a part of the program. There is a really disturbing piece on the Law and Crime website. It's Dan Abrams' website. That's a sister website to Mediaite. And it chronicled the FBI director. He was testifying today on Capitol Hill, and he was asked by Senator Rand Paul whether President Trump was still being wiretapped by any government intelligence agency. Now, you would think the answer is, oh, absolutely not. But that's not the answer. His answer was not exactly reassuring. Now, the FBI director, Chris Wray, declined to actually answer that question as to whether or not the FBI, the National Security Agency, is currently collecting phone conversations of President Trump. And during a Senate committee hearing on national security issues, Senator Paul asked, do you think it's possible that the president's conversations with international leaders, remember when he was first in office, that you were leaking conversations with the president of Mexico, the prime minister of Australia? I mean, that's never happened before. Anyway, he was asking whether it was possible that the president's conversations with international leaders are, you know, in the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act database. And Ray's response was, well, I'm not sure there's anything I could speak to in this setting. Well, then Senator Paul continued, do you think it's possible that Congress, members of Congress, are in the FISA database if we talk to international leaders? And then Ray deflected again. He said, well, Senator, I'm quite confident that we are conducting ourselves in a manner consistent with the law and the Constitution that's subject to extensive oversight. I don't know that I can speak to every hypothetical about whether there have been such situations. And then Rand Paul asked Director Ray whether journalist conversations were being possibly scooped up by the intelligence community's vast spying apparatus simply because they write stories about people with, say, a terrorist name in them. And Ray declined to answer again. I can't speak to specific hypotheticals. Well, at that point, Rand Paul cut the FBI director off and said the answer's yes. And as his time with Ray was drawing to a close, he spoke about the potential abuse within the FISA system. And Rand Paul is absolutely right. He said, you've had people bringing their politics to work. The concern of us who want more control over what you do and how you look at data is, as James Madison said, men are not angels. That's why we have the Constitution. That's why we ask you to get a warrant. The information you've gathered in foreign database is not constitutional in the sense that it's gathered with no bar. There's no warrant. There's no constitutional matter to that data. And yet you're going to use it on a domestic crime. That has been our complaint for years and years and years. And I got to admit, after 9/11, I thought FISA was a great idea. Never having any belief that it was possible, as naive as I guess I was, that we would have government officials at the top upper echelons within the intel community, the FBI and the DOJ, that would literally be weaponizing the powerful tools of intelligence that we give them to protect we the people. And that I never in my lifetime thought that a political candidate can put together a flimsy dossier with Russian sources and it becomes the basis for a FISA warrant application, but not one, four. The original application and three subsequent applications. And that the bulk of the information was bought and paid for by one political candidate to use against another candidate. And that it was never verified or corroborated, but still presented to a FISA court. And they purposely don't tell the FISA court judges that the other candidate paid for this and that they never verified it by swearing, you know, we'll get into this, you know, with Chairman Mark Meadows of Freedom Caucus and Jim Jordan later. I mean, think about that. This is we have a constitution for a reason. There's a reason why you need a warrant. There's a reason why you have to present credible evidence to a court to get a warrant. The bar is even higher when it comes to a FISA surveillance warrant. And what has happened here is the single biggest abuse of power corruption scandal ever. Now we've got three people on record saying that Rod Rosenstein, well, he had a plan hatched to surreptitiously record the president in the hopes that they can invoke the 25th Amendment, and he won't even testify under oath. Said no. And Congress is going to let him get away with that? Trey Gowdy's going to let him get away with that? Bob Goodlatte's going to let him get away with that? Anyway, a lot to get to. Newt Gingrich, when we get back, we'll have more on Hurricane Michael. Chairman Meadows of the Freedom Caucus, Jim Jordan are coming up. We got a lot to get to today. All right, as we roll along, Sean Hannity Show, 800-941-SEAN. We're monitoring the what is now the worst hurricane ever to hit the Florida panhandle, Hurricane Michael. We'll continue to monitor that. We got an election in 27 days. We'll talk strategy next with Newt Gingrich. Rod Rosenstein refusing to testify before the House Judiciary Committee. Should he be subpoenaed? Mark Meadows and Jim Jordan will join us on that. Now that we have three people, Lisa Page, Andrew McCabe, and James Baker saying that he wanted to surreptitiously tape the president and try and get the 25th Amendment invoked. All right, glad you're with us. 27 days to the all-important midterm elections. Glad you're with us. 800-941-SEAN if you want to be a part of the program. Really good polling information as it relates to the election. Rasmussen now, and by the way, they had the best accuracy in 2016 of anybody in terms of election results. They nailed it. And the latest Rasmussen survey finds that 45% of likely voters would choose Democratic candidates if the elections in Congress were held today. 45% would opt for the Republican. And another sign that the vicious strategy against Judge Kavanaugh has backfired. Rasmussen also points out Republicans are a lot more angry about how it was handled than Democrats, with 62% of Republicans saying they're more likely to vote as a result. Only 54% of Democrats. 27 days, we will know. This will be the day after Election Day, 4 weeks from now, whether or not Nancy Pelosi will be the next Speaker of the House, Chuck Schumer the next Senate Majority Leader, Whether or not the success and the progress that we have obtained in the last 2 years will come to a halt, or whether the American renaissance will continue. It's a very simple choice election on every issue. And that's, the Democrats want their crumbs back. They want to repeal the largest tax cuts in history. We know they want endless investigation of President Trump. It'll be nonstop, 24/7. And we know the ultimate goal of most Democrats is to impeach the president. We know that they want to keep Obamacare. Republicans would like to have free market solutions. We know they want to eliminate ICE and want open borders. Republicans want to build the border wall. And Kevin McCarthy has put forward a bill to have full funding of that wall. Where do we go? 27 days left. Former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich, probably the smartest strategist when it comes to elections that I know. Welcome back, sir. How are you?
Well, it's great to be with you. Let me just say, I'm going to shock you. I believe the quote you have from Hillary Clinton is right. She's correct.
Meaning?
If we win, if we get a Trump Supreme Court, we get conservative policies in Congress, we roll back the regulatory state, her world goes away. I mean, I don't blame her for being terrified, because she should be. The American people have risen up and said, we don't want radicalism. We don't want to abolish America in favor of global institutions. We don't want to abolish the U.S. Constitution in favor of nutcake left-wing judges. We actually like lower taxes, more jobs, and a better future. And from the standpoint of a left-wing Democrat, this would be the end of their world. So I think her level of intensity and emotionalism is right, because she's actually sending a signal to the American people. This is what this is about. You want a future where the Hillary Clintons and the Congresswoman Waters and people like Nancy Pelosi define your future? Or do you want a future in which you have the power, because you've got money in your pocket, your taxes are lower, the red tape is less, the Washington bureaucracy is smaller, and you actually get to define your own future? It is that dramatic a difference.
Well, look, you know as well as I do, there's only been three times in the last 100 years where the party that wins the White House ends up picking up seats in Congress in their first midterm election. Now, the last time that happened was after the 9/11 attacks in 2002. And I think the country was so unified at that moment that there was no desire to change power in any way, shape, manner, or form. I think before Judge Kavanaugh, I was a little worried about the enthusiasm gap that existed between Republican voters and Democratic voters. That gap is now closed completely. And in most instances, when there's a tie, that means that's a huge advantage for Republicans, because pollsters don't tend to get that right.
All right. Well, look, you mentioned a minute ago one of the key examples of why the next few weeks are going to become Republican weeks. Kevin McCarthy just introduced a really important bill that says, basically, look, here's your choice. You want to stop fentanyl from killing people. You want to stop carfentanil, which is even worse, from killing people. You want to stop opioids coming in from Mexico. You want to stop human trafficking coming in from Mexico. You want to stop MS-13 coming in from Mexico. You got to control the border. And he has got the first bill that absolutely says unequivocally, we're going to control the border. Now, what are the Democrats offering? They're offering open borders, either abolish or shrink ICE, sanctuary cities. So the Democrats are saying, look, we feel really bad that your child may die of an opioid overdose. We feel really bad that your neighborhood school may be terrorized by MS-13. But after all, we're left-wing ideologues, and you can't expect us to be practical. So why don't you go along with us? Because, you know, that's the right thing to do, is open up America and let every drug dealer, every human trafficker, and every single MS-13 gang member come into the country. Now, I think if that's the choice on election day, you and I are going to have to fasten our seatbelts, because we're going to be in for an election result like we have not seen in our lifetime.
Well, I believe now firmly that, you know, all the people that have been claiming a blue wave can be shocked again, just like they were in 2016. And there were only a couple of us that believed that that was even possible. And I think one indicator of just how far left the Democratic Party has gone is out in California, the sanctuary state of California. And you have Gavin Newsom running up against this business guy by the name of John Cox.
John Cox.
And Cox is now in a 5-point, almost within the margin race against Gavin Newsom. And one of the biggest issues to emerge is not only the sanctuary city status of the whole state, but the proposal of Gavin Newsom to provide free health care to anybody. It doesn't matter, you know, resident of California, citizen, non-citizen, doesn't matter. Everybody gets free health care.
Look, I would ask everybody who's listening to us, just close your eyes for a second and think about the problem. Don't do this if you're driving. Keep your eyes open. But everybody's not driving. Close your eyes for a second and think about Gavin Newsom is proposing at a time when Senator Feinstein has introduced an open borders bill. And by the way, President Trump's been very clear on this the last couple of days. The Democrats in the Senate, every single Democrat in the Senate, has co-sponsored the Feinstein open borders bill. So now what the Democrats are proposing to us is the following. We're going to have open borders so anybody who wants to can come in. We're going to offer them free health care paid for by the taxpayer. Now, just apply your common sense. Worldwide, among billions of people, the word's going to go out within days. If you have an illness, get to California. They want to take care of you. I mean, how many people do we think are going to show up who need health care?
Well, what if you don't have health care and you live in Alabama or you live in Missouri or you live in Michigan? I wouldn't mind driving out to California if I needed serious, significant health care. Who's going to pay for it? Now, they income tax of 13.
I hadn't thought about that. That's a great idea. I never thought about the notion. I apologize. That's who you said it.
Don't worry. I have a very dark, twisted way of thinking. Go ahead.
No. I'm impressed. This is one of those times when you've taken me just totally off my feet. And it hadn't occurred to me. You're exactly right. Newsom's plan could apply to every American. So what we could say to every governor in the country is, send them to California.
We'll ship him out to California.
I never thought of that.
You know, it'll lower the health care costs for every other state in the union. Everybody, you're sick, go to California. Gavin Newsom offered you free care.
Gavin Newsom's going to save every state in America billions of dollars. I had never thought of that. I got to go. I got to think about this, Sean. By the time I do your show tonight,
you're going to work on this.
You caught me totally off guard.
It's not easy to get Newt Gingrich off guard. I will say that. I'm actually, you know, there have been times when, you know, you have warned me as the, you know, we're really family. I've gotten to know you so well. I consider you family. And, you know, but you're always, you know, quick to tell me you're out on a limb again. You're out there again. But what are you doing? You don't hesitate to tell me when you think I'm gone too far.
You won this round.
No, it's not about winning.
Totally. I'm amazed.
You know what I want? I want the country to win. I'm not sick of winning, and I'm glad we have 4 million more Americans working, ending burdensome regulation, a chance at energy independence. The wall is being built if we can fund the rest of it. I'm happy about, you know, all of the renegotiated trade deals. I think it's a more secure world. And I like the success. I like the direction we're heading, and I think we're better off than we were 2 years ago by a long shot.
Well, that's what's amazing about this moment in time, as you know, because you and I met with the president last week, and you know we're talking with a guy who has kept his word in deregulation, kept his word in conservative judges, kept his word in cutting taxes, kept his word on getting better trade deals, and you look at the results and you think to yourself, lowest African-American unemployment in history, lowest Latino unemployment in history. I think that down to, 1969 is the last time we were this good for everybody in general. When you look at all this, you think, this is really working. And that's what the argument is. The fight this year is between results and resistance. And the president is focused on results, and the Democrats are focused on resistance.
You know, I think that we have an opportunity here. I just hope the American people are awake to what is at stake here. And, you know, I go through what the Democratic agenda is, and it is very dire to me. Endless investigation. They want to impeach the president. They want the higher taxes, even though Americans are seeing $1,000, $2,000 extra dollars in their pocket every year. That's real money for real people. We're seeing manufacturing jobs coming back, jobs we were told were never coming back. We see the Midwest growth now beginning a comeback that is rival to none that we've seen in our lifetime. And, you know, I see millions of Americans off of food stamps, 8 million off of poverty since Trump has become president. This is real progress. And maybe some people don't like the president's style, but he's getting things done. The disruption and the speed of Trump works. Why would we go backwards?
Well, I think that's right. And I think the big challenge in the next few weeks is for every single person who wants America to keep moving in the right direction, to make sure that they vote, their friends vote, everybody they know votes. This is because elections, you know, I learned this a long time ago. Elections aren't about polling. Elections are about who shows up. I always tell people when they say, well, what do you think is going to happen? I say, show me the first five or six precincts. When I see real Americans vote in a real precinct, I begin to think about, okay, I'm beginning to get the pattern. And I think that we have a real shot here at the most historic midterm election in American history. And I say this very clearly. If this breaks the way I think it could, it'll be the most historic midterm election in American history, and it will further accelerate the Trump revolution at creating jobs, defending America, reshaping the federal government, draining the swamp, and doing the things we need as a country for us to be safe.
All right, as we continue, Sean Hannity Show, Martha McSally has taken a lead out in that Arizona Senate race. We have a close race in Nevada with Dean Heller. Right now, Claire McCaskill is down in Missouri. We could pick up a seat in Montana against Tester, which is a possibility. Joe Donnelly is in trouble. Heidi Heitkamp is in trouble. Bill Nelson is in trouble. And hopefully Joe Manchin becomes a Republican. Speaker Gingrich, we continue with you. How important are these Senate races? How winnable are they all?
Well, first of all, they're unbelievably important. Remember, the great achievement of beginning to shift the American judges back to people who believe in the Constitution and who believe in America is only effective if Mitch McConnell's the leader. I mean, the work he has done this year working with President Trump is truly historic and heroic. And it's not just the Supreme Court justice, although obviously we're all thrilled that we were able to finally have a success in achieving a victory last week. But that's just the beginning. The fact is that the president and the Senate Majority Leader have worked together to move almost one out of every four federal judges towards a more constitutional, more conservative, more American interpretation of the law. And this is a remarkable achievement. If the Democrats were to win this, and this is why I said everybody back home, this is not complicated. I mean, you've got Bredesen running in Tennessee saying, oh, I'm really a moderate. Well, who's going to vote for it? He's going to vote for Schumer, period. The Democrat in Arizona, she says, claims to be a moderate. Who's she going to vote for? She's going to vote for Schumer, period. Well, what does that mean? It means not a single Trump judge will move forward. Not a single Trump appointment will move forward. So control of the Senate is absolutely vital if, in fact, you want to continue to move the American government towards a pro-American constitutional conservatism, which I think is what, frankly, helped win the election in 2016.
Former Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich, in 27 days, you will be on this show and we will be analyzing the results. The people get to decide. Please vote. Thank you.
The rule of law is indispensable to a thriving and vibrant society. It shields citizens from government overreaching and arbitrary action. Pursuing truth means always yielding to the facts, even if they run counter to our hopes. In a courtroom, truth is about credible evidence, not strong opinions,
There's a lot of talk about FISA applications, and many people that I see talking about it seem not to recognize what a FISA application is. A FISA application is actually a warrant, just like a search warrant. In order to get a FISA search warrant, you need an affidavit signed by a career federal law enforcement officer who swears that the information in the affidavit is true and correct to the best of his knowledge and belief. And that's the way we operate. And if it's wrong, sometimes it is, if you find out there's anything incorrect in there, that person is going to face consequences.
And if you find out anything's wrong in there, that person is going to face consequences. You got to affix your signature to this, you know, a signed affidavit to get a FISA warrant signed by a career law enforcement person swearing that what you are presenting to the court is true and that you know it to be true and have affirmed it to be true. Well, that didn't work out with the third renewal FISA application in the case of Carter Page, which is the fourth FISA warrant issued. But the fourth one that was signed by Rod Rosenstein. And we all know that the bulk of information that was put in the FISA warrants, well, that was based on the phony Clinton bought and paid for dossier that not even Christopher Steele stands by to this day, and that was never verified, never corroborated, and has turned out to be mostly debunked, which is among the many other conflicts that Rod Rosenstein has. Of course, he's the one that recommended firing Jim Comey. He's the one that signed the FISA warrants. He's the one that appointed Mueller. And now he was scheduled to appear tomorrow under oath. And two sources now telling Fox News at this hour that Rod Rosenstein's scheduled appearance before the House Judiciary Committee is at an impasse over the terms of the testimony. And he doesn't want to have a transcribed interview under oath, which is the standard for congressional task force interviews. And those close to Rosenstein say, well, he prefers a meeting or a briefing with the House Judiciary Committee chairman and other lawmakers where there's no paper trail, where there's no under oath part. Well, the question is, why would he be afraid to go under oath? Well, here to weigh in on this and much more as this impasse continues, Mark Meadows. He is the Freedom Caucus chairman, and Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio, also a Freedom Caucus member. And by the way, would be in this House Judiciary Committee interview of Rod Rosenstein. We also have learned in the last 3 days, Mark Meadows, I'll start with you, that we now know that Lisa Page, Andrew McCabe, the deputy FBI director who's under criminal investigation, Lisa Page, who is out at the FBI, James Baker, the top attorney at the FBI, they all are telling the same story that Rod Rosenstein said that he wanted to surreptitiously record the president of the United States in the hopes of being able to get him to say something that would allow them to invoke the 25th Amendment. So there's a lot of questions for Rod Rosenstein at this moment.
Well, there are a lot of questions. I think probably the bigger question is, why would Rod Rosenstein not be prepared to come to Congress tomorrow to clear his name? And I think the reason for that is there are credible witnesses. You know, your lead-in had Rod Rosenstein's voice saying, well, you know, there needs to be facts and we have the rule of law. Well, we're willing to consider him innocent until proven guilty. Him not coming tomorrow indicates that there is real credibility with these witnesses that suggested that he not only wanted to tape the president, but he wanted to use those tapes to effectively have a DOJ coup on the president of the United States.
Well, he met with the president apparently earlier this week and flew on Air Force One. Does anyone know what the result of that meeting was?
Well, I think probably the biggest thing is, Sean, let's don't read too much into a flight on Air Force One. Mm-hmm. I think it's the president trying to be reasonable and hear Rod's side of the story. I think the president has been extremely measured. I tell you who's not measured at this particular point. You've got Rod Rosenstein believing that he can hide behind the fact that he's the number two at DOJ. I can tell you, you've got two people on the phone today, Jim Jordan and Mark Meadows, who are not going to let that happen.
Okay, Jim Jordan, why is this even an issue? Why isn't you have the power to subpoena Rod Rosenstein, do you not, and bring him in and put him under oath?
Yeah, I mean, and this is why that should happen, and I hope Chairman Goodlatte will do that. We've already subpoenaed the McCabe memos. The McCabe memos are what the New York Times cited that said there were people in that room with Rod Rosenstein who said Rod Rosenstein was talking about recording the President of the United States. So we have the FBI former chief counsel, Jim Baker, saying he took that as seriously when he was told about that meeting, that Rod Rosenstein was thinking about recording the commander-in-chief of this great country. And we have the McCabe memos that reinforce that. We've subpoenaed the McCabe memos, and we've asked Mr. Rosenstein to come in and answer our questions. Neither one of those things have happened. So that's Mr. Rosenstein, in his lead-in that you played, Sean, he talked about trends. He talked about facts and adhering to this and how our rule of law and our justice system works. Well, one of the hallmarks of our justice system is transparency. Show us the documents. Give us those McCabe memos. And more importantly, come answer our questions. That's what bothers both of us.
Well, why would the committee allow him to pull out of this?
Well, I can tell you that the committee has shown weak leadership, and I hate to criticize anybody, but we've had 2 weeks. I can tell you, the Speaker of the House, the Majority Leader of the House, Jim Jordan and I, with Chairman Goodlatte in the room and two or three other staffers, we all agreed that what we would do is move expeditiously to have him come in, do a transcribed interview, and if they did not, if Rod did not, because I suspected that he wouldn't come in, that mm-hmm. we would subpoena him and compel him to do that. And I can tell you that it's more excuses on why he should not be transparent, and I, for one, am tired of it.
So we're basically saying Republicans that have the power of subpoena and could literally force him to come and testify under oath and answer these really important questions. If there was a plot, a scheme, a plan, now you've got three people corroborating, Lisa Page, Andrew McCabe, and now mm-hmm. James Baker, all saying that he talked about taping the President of the United States in the hopes that it would provide materials that they could invoke the 25th Amendment. He says, no, I didn't say, I was just joking about it. I don't see what's so funny about it, or said it sarcastically. I don't even see any sarcasm in that. And they are saying that they all believed he was saying it seriously.
Yes, that is accurate. And even if he was joking, you should, the guy who is in effect running the Justice Department should not be joking with subordinates about recording the commander-in-chief of the United States. That even if it's a joke, that's not something you do, particularly at the time that this was happening. Remember, Sean, this is back in May of 2017 when the whole darn city is in an uproar because on May 9th, the president fires Jim Comey. On May 17th, Rod Rosenstein names Bob Mueller as a special counsel.
Well, there's one other thing, Jim Jordan.
What happened in between there?
Remember, Lisa Page said up to that point, they never had any evidence
exactly.
of Trump-Russia collusion, but there was a
exactly.
media leak strategy so that they were creating an atmosphere where people were thinking there was some type of
exactly.
of reason to appoint a special counsel,
yeah.
which now gets back to what the insurance policy was that Page and Strzok were talking about, and it seems we've got our answer now.
Well, yeah, you're right. Just, I think not only were they leaking the narrative, and Jim's exactly right. You know, there's a whole lot that has gone into this, you know, where we've got actually memos that have been subpoenaed, testimony that's there, a narrative that was put out there by the Department of Justice and FBI, and yet they knew that many of the things that they were putting out in the media could not be substantiated. I would go even further than this. You know, you did the lead-in. I'm not even sure that Rod Rosenstein read the FISA application mm-hmm. that he signed. You know, when you start to look and hear some of the testimony, it is chilling the amount of documents that they failed to read. And I'm not so sure that Rod Rosenstein even...
Well, did
even
they fail to read them? Do we know they failed to read them or they didn't care? I mean, there's two different possibilities here. One of the big problems with all of this is every single item we're discussing here, and the Grassley-Graham memo pointed it out, the Nunes memo pointed it out, that the bulk of information used to obtain the FISA warrants, that they were literally committing a fraud on the FISA court. They never substantiated, they never verified, they never corroborated any of the Christopher Steele's, you know, dossier. And as a result, mm-hmm. it was used as the bulk of information to obtain the warrants. And the problem is not even Steele agrees that there's any truth in what he wrote.
Well, that's correct. That not even Steele and Simpson believe all the things that were given to Bruce Orr. But here's the other problem. is even Bruce Orr knew that some of the things that he was writing there were not accurate. And yet somehow they get put in a 302 and they get used as justification to actually further an investigation in terms of the President of the United States. It's just sickening. It truly is sickening.
All right, so what's the next step? Well, why isn't Goodlatte and Gowdy demanding that Rod Rosenstein appear tomorrow under oath and answer these questions, whether or not he talked about surreptitiously, you know, taping the President of the United States for the purposes of invoking the 25th Amendment? We need an answer to that.
Yes, we do, and the American people need an answer, and that's what we'll be pushing Chairman Goodlatte to do. He indicated that he would do that. So now is the time, obviously, to get that done and make sure Mr. Rosenstein gets in there to answer these important questions. Now that we know that there's actual documents that talk about what took place in that meeting back between May 9th and May 17th of 2017, where he allegedly said that he was going to record the president. And now that we have a individual who's come forward and said he took it seriously after talking with Page and Mr. McCabe, who came right from that meeting. So, look, we got to subpoena him. We got to bring him in so we can ask him the questions.
All right, we'll take a quick break. More with Congressman Mark Meadows of North Carolina, Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio, and more on the latest. Why won't Rod Rosenstein answer these questions under oath? We continue with Congressman Jim Jordan and Congressman Mark Meadows. All right, so the next step then is what? I mean, do I need to give out the numbers of Trey Gowdy's office and Chairman Goodlatte's office and say, call these men and demand that they subpoena under oath Rod Rosenstein? Well, I don't know why there would be any hesitation, considering that he is up to his eyeballs in everything. The firing of Comey, the appointment of Robert Mueller, the signing of the third FISA warrant, and three people now saying that he's talking about taping the President of the United States in the context of possibly invoking the 25th Amendment. What else do we need to get a subpoena for somebody?
Well, hopefully, I would not encourage giving out anybody's phone number, and you're great at holding people accountable, but here's what I would say, is the fact that you're covering it, and your listeners and the people that truly tune in on a regular basis to listen to you, they need to make sure their member of Congress feels the heat and understands how important this is. But the other part of that is Jim and I are trying to work today to stress the importance of why transparency and the fact that the Deputy Attorney General must come in. He must raise his right hand and say, this is what I did and this is what I didn't do. And anything shy of that really would be an indictment on his credibility.
Yeah. What about the president now talked about declassifying and releasing the unredacted FISA applications, especially pages 10 through 12, 17 through 34, the final FISA warrant, the one that Rod Rosenstein signed. Have either of you seen that particular FISA application?
I have not, Sean. We need to see that. We need to see the notes that are taken after every time Bruce Orr goes in and talks with the FBI. Remember, Mr. Orr told us that after each conversation he had with Glenn Simpson and Chris Steele, he would then contact a person at the FBI and he would sit down with them and they would take notes. We want to see all those notes of all those conversations. We know there are at least 12 of those. So the so-called 302s, we need to see those. And remember when the president first talked about declassifying, well, we all asked him to do this 3 weeks ago, he talked about any communications from Andy McCabe, Lisa Page, all those documents as well. That would include the McCabe memo. So we need all that information. And again, if Mr. Rosenstein, that lead-in you did, talks about how our great system of justice works, key to that is transparency. Give us the information that we need to see, and more importantly, the American people need to see.
Well, if you want to call Chairman Gowdy, it's 202-225-6030. Be polite, please. 202-225-6030. Chairman Goodlatte is 202-225-5431. 202-225-5431. We'll put them up on Hannity.com. And again, be respectful, but I think with all that's going on, they should demand that he testify under oath. Thank you so much, Congressman Mark Meadows. Thank you, Congressman Jim Jordan. And we appreciate your push for the truth. We need to get to the bottom of this. All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, we've got a lot more to come. Dan Bongino, Greg Jarrett will have more on this. Also, the latest on this hurricane that is pounding the Florida panhandle as we speak. Hurricane Michael and much more. Hannity tonight, 9 Eastern on the Fox News Channel. We got a great show. We'll tell you about that in a minute.
The idea of holding a victory rally like this for Justice Kavanaugh to say this, the court should not be a partisan institution, but then stand there and thank mainly Republicans. Joe Manchin got a shout out for his vote. It's just not something that's supposed to happen.
Remember his divisive language tonight at Justice Kavanaugh swearing in? Proof that this president is our divider in chief.
Time and again, when the president gets a chance to heal the country, he does just the opposite.
My question to you is how you would sum up what you saw yesterday happening in the East Room at the White House.
It was graceless.
There was talk of impeaching the new Supreme Court justice if Democrats take control of the House.
But will you support, would you support an impeachment effort if your party controls the House?
Do you think it is a good move for Democrats politically, strategically, ethically, morally to pursue potentially an investigation that could lead to impeachment?
There's discussion now of impeaching not the president, but Brett Kavanaugh, now that he's a Supreme Court justice.
Running on this idea that Democrats Democrats intend to impeach Judge Kavanaugh is the way to keep the enthusiasm about this nomination in play.
Now, is it realistic to expect an investigation that could potentially end with impeachment proceedings?
Kavanaugh, if they get control of the House, possibly looking at impeachment, what do you make of those pledges?
That there will be an attempt to impeach Justice Kavanaugh.
I think that it should be.
Would you support a House investigation at the start for an impeachment vote into Judge Kavanaugh?
All right, there you hear it. And in all of its glory, the media encouraging Democrats to impeach Kavanaugh. That's their next step. That's part of what they want to do. Media depressed after the Kavanaugh confirmation. Now we've got every single Democrat on record now saying what they want to do if they get back power, that they want their crumbs back. They want tax increases. They're out there suggesting that, well, maybe the next step is, well, we'll keep Obamacare, we'll impeach the president, endless investigation, raise your taxes, and we want to eliminate ICE and open borders. Wow, what an agenda. Anyway, Dan Bongino is joining us. He just released his brand new book. It's called Spygate, The Attempted Sabotage of Donald J. Trump. Greg Jarrett, Fox News legal analyst. And Dan has some catching up to do. He's been number one on the New York Times list with the Russia hoax. Welcome both of you to the program. You watch the tactics. You see the polls for the first time. Rasmussen showing that Republicans have more enthusiasm than Democrats in the lead up to the midterm elections. I think the Kavanaugh hearings has awoken people to just how vicious the Democratic Party can be.
Yeah, listen, the old tactics of the past with the Republican Party, which you're intimately familiar with, were Democrats lob a political grenade right onto the field, usually some kind of, you go through the list every night on your Fox show, you know, racist, misogynist, you know, the istophobic, phobophobe kind of stuff, these identity politics grenades, and Republicans would scatter. Well, they tried a new one with Kavanaugh. They tried a really disgusting one, this rapist line, which is one of the most abhorrent things I've ever seen in politics. And for the first time, Sean, in a long time, we had a president in the White House who said, we're not going to back down. And Kavanaugh, we're not going to let you back down. We're going to back you up. And we won one. And that win, I believe, is really just, and listen, it's not a scientific sample. I don't want to oversell it. But based on me just driving around in my town, which is a 50-50 Republican-Democrat county, Martin County, Florida, Republicans could not be more ecstatic that we finally have a warrior and a fighter in the White House who is not going to flee the battlefield when that identity politics or disgusting label comes in from the Democrat Party. And I think it's really spiced up the Republican base. And I think we may have a decent election day.
Well, I'm not sure. I can't read the tea leaves. I think it all comes down in these midterm elections, always comes down to turnout. And if people are motivated, like the Rasmussen poll says, then it would happen. I mean, I'm looking at the numbers that Republicans are more mad about the Kavanaugh controversy than Democrats and are more determined to vote in the upcoming elections. This is a dramatic 25-point shift in just the last 6 weeks, Greg Jarrett. So that would give hope to me. And hopefully the American people that somehow the Republicans can buck the trend and maintain power in the House and maybe pick up some Senate seats, which I think are a distinct possibility.
Well, I think you're right. The only question is, with 27 days remaining, does this trend that Republicans are motivated and energized to vote have legs? Will it last over the course of the next 4 weeks? And, you know, we just don't know that. But you're right, the polling data does show that. And, I think that there is a general anger among both men and women across America that this was a process of the confirmation hearing that was anathema to fairness and the presumption of innocence and due process, and that absent some corroborating evidence from a 36-year-old claim, you really can't ruin somebody's career and their life. And, you know, the reputation that they've built up and the goodwill and their family's reputation. So, I mean, I do think that there is a feeling across America that a lot of this is unfair. Now, there are liberals and the media, which is redundant, who are so rabid that they don't care about fairness. They just care about their own political agenda, however misplaced and wrong it may be. And so you're never going to change their minds. There is no reasoning with unreasonable people. So we'll just have to wait and see. It's up to the Republican Party, I think, and the candidates, and indeed President Trump, to maintain the momentum going forward over the next 27 days.
Look, The Hill had a great article today about what their agenda is, and the Democrats have big plans, none of which will help the country. They want to shore up Obamacare, which has been nothing short of a disaster for the American people. They want more Dodd-Frank financial rules to protect, quote, dreamers and the integrity of elections. In other words, they want massive amnesty. They want to aggressively probe any single thing they can. They want this country locked down into endless investigation and likely the impeachment of Donald Trump. They, you know, Republicans celebrate the passage of the biggest tax cut in history. They refer to it as crumbs, and they're saying it's time to take the crumbs back. I guess the crumbs are the most delicious part of the meal. So all of this is in jeopardy, Dan Bongino. I don't see a waning in people's enthusiasm now. I think they went so far in the Kavanaugh case, and frankly, in the last 2 years, what we have witnessed with the, and you chronicle this in your new book, you know, the attempted sabotage of the president, I think they see the fundamental unfairness, and nothing they stand for is going to help the average American have a better life.
Right. And Sean, the media, and Greg just nailed it, by the way, you know, the media and the Democrats, which is it's symbiotic. I mean, it's a host and a parasite at this point. They're the same thing. They have ginned up this rage, not all of them, but many of them, against Donald Trump to such an intense point. I mean, think about the things, Sean, that have come out. I mean, new lows in politics. Donald Trump's Supreme Court nominee called a rapist. Donald Trump called guilty of treason. A crime literally punishable by death. That's not hyperbolic. He's been called treasonous. They've ginned up the base so much, Sean, that here's the problem the Democrats have created for themselves in the election. That in order to seem like the more anti-Trump candidate to get that money and those volunteers for your 2020 presidential campaign, or to get that money in the midterms, what do you have to do? You have to oppose the traitor. You have to oppose the train rapist or whatever sick name they called Kavanaugh. So that's what's leading to this psychopathology on the left. And I agree. I don't see this waning. And I do see Republican voters saying, listen, when is enough enough? You attack this American patriot and Kavanaugh. You try to take down the Trump administration, weaponizing the government. When is enough enough? And I think they're going to show up. I hope. I pray they do.
Well, what do you think about Hillary's endorsement of the incitement of getting in people's face, saying you can't be civil? She's basically calling for incivility. You can't be civil with a political party that wants to destroy what you stand for, what you care about. And then the other comments made by people like Maxine Waters and others, get in their face, follow them into grocery stores, follow them into gas stations, confront them, chase them out of restaurants, which we have seen going on and on a regular basis.
For Republicans, it is absolutely wonderful. You know, they ought to send an early Christmas gift to Hillary Clinton, Michael Avenatti, Maxine Waters, Jerry Nadler, Nancy Pelosi. Many of those individuals are calling for the investigation and impeachment of Brett Kavanaugh, which Americans realize is wrong and preposterous. I could certainly explain how on a legal basis impeachment is not possible for Brett Kavanaugh. But the more that these toxic individuals, and all of the ones I mentioned, especially Hillary Clinton, are toxic, the more that only drives Republican voters to the polls to make sure that these people are not in positions of power and will not be able to ruin the accomplishments of Donald Trump, which have been incredible. You know, in the course of 2 years, he's accomplished more than Barack Obama did in 8 years, the greatest level of American economic growth and prosperity in modern American history. And that is not just made up. I mean, the statistics demonstrate that. And so if Americans want to maintain that prosperity and add, you know, money to their wallets and deprive it from government officials who love to squander hard-earned money from American taxpayers, their choice is easy.
Well, I did like what Kevin McCarthy introduced, which is a bill to fully fund the Trump border wall. The president has already spent about, what, $3.5 billion. He needs about $23 billion more to get the job done. And I think that is certainly one of the big issues that Americans would be motivated to go out and vote for. And the other, I think, you know, the president rightly said he could make as many as 4 more Supreme Court appointments. That is a massive issue at this point. It's a tipping point for the courts. You know, if you think of the age and the health of some of the justices, there's no doubt there will be vacancies in years to come, in the near future.
Yeah, and don't forget, Sean, the circuits and the district courts. The Supreme Court gets all of the attention. You know, it's the sexy story, the highest court in the land, quite obviously. But as Greg can tell you, most of these cases that are of importance to American businesses, American individuals, moms and dads out there, are settled at the circuit court level. They don't even make it to the Supreme Court. And Trump already has, 26 appointees to the circuit courts? And there's a couple more getting ready to be confirmed as well. So this is a really big deal. Now, we have, of course, the Ginsburg seat. You know, that could come open if Trump wins re-election. It may come open. I say this, Sean, I'm worried. I mean, I mean it. I'm actually worried what will happen to the country if that seat, if Ginsburg decides to step down. I mean, look what we just witnessed with Kavanaugh. Can you imagine what's going to happen if that seat comes open and it's a potential 6-3 conservative majority on the courts? I mean, it genuinely frightens me. And again, that's not melodramatic. I worry for my kids what will happen.
Both of you have been following and have been part of an ensemble group of us. There's not a lot of us following all of the deep state movements. Now the issue today, and we just had on Mark Meadows and Jim Jordan talking about Rod Rosenstein, is now saying he doesn't want to appear before the House Judiciary Committee on the issues before them. And that is the latest one that Lisa Page, Andrew McCabe, and James Baker have all said that Rod Rosenstein talked about surreptitiously taping the president of the United States in the hopes of getting something on tape that might invoke the 25th Amendment. This is the same Rod Rosenstein that is up to his eyeballs in conflict, having written a letter and recommended the firing of James Comey, the same guy that signed the fourth and final FISA warrant that we should have unredacted and released to the American people. That hasn't happened yet. And the same guy that appointed Robert Mueller. Why wouldn't he want to testify, Greg Jarrett, under oath?
Well, he doesn't want a transcribed interview or anything under oath, which Chairman Goodlatte and others are demanding. Why? If it's not recorded or not under oath, Rosenstein can do what he always does, deceive and lie with impunity without putting himself in legal jeopardy. So what Rosenstein really wants is, oh, you know, Mr. Goodlatte, let's just you and I sit down and have a cup of coffee and we'll chat a little bit. So if Rosenstein were to lie, as I suspect he might, he's not looking at a false and misleading statement to Congress. He's not looking at perjury because he can always deny the conversation that Goodlatte remembers, which is why this is so critically important.
Well, they've got to demand, they've got to subpoena him, and they've got to demand he show up, and they've got to put him under oath, and these answers have to be given. But I got to let you both go, though.
Right.
Great job, Greg Jarrett. Congrats on the success of the Russia hoax. Dan Bongino's new book is out right now, Spygate, the Attempted Sabotage of Donald J. Trump. That's soon to be a bestseller. Thank you, Dan Bongino. Appreciate you both being with us. When we come back, WeatherBell.com's Joe Bastardi will update us next.
Fortunately, this is a Gulf Coast hurricane of the worst kind because all of the elements associated with hurricanes come into play. So the storm surge estimates are anywhere between 9 and 14 feet. Storm surge is going to be the worst where the eye makes landfall, just to the east or south of where the eye makes landfall. Somewhere right now it's projected between Panama City, Apalachicola, and then it's going to push forward. So not only is it going to bring 14 feet of ocean water and coastal flood inundation, there'll be wave action on top of that, which is the primary driver of why we evacuate, sir. And then coupled with that, you've got over 145 mile per hour winds. Structures built before 2001 are not designed to handle that type of wind typically, and it's going unfortunately push through the state. So we're asking citizens in Southwest Georgia, Central Georgia, to be vigilant and make sure that they understand what's about to come, because this area is going to see a Cat 1, Cat 2 storm as it moves inland. And with the vegetation there, what we're anticipating is a lot of downed trees impacting the power grid. And here again, we're going to see a lot of devastation along the coast structurally, and then as it moves in, you're going to see power outages throughout the state.
All right, that was Brock Long, FEMA administrator, saying that Hurricane Michael is a Gulf Coast hurricane of the worst kind. Michael striking the Florida panhandle, the exact dead hit, and winds now gusting up to 175 miles per hour. The damage is severe. It is hitting at maximum strength now as we speak. We welcome back to the program our good friend Joe Bastardi. He's the official meteorologist of the Sean Hannity Show with WeatherBell.com. Well, everything you predicted as we talked earlier in the program today has come true. This is a bad, bad storm. They're now in the middle of it, and it's more devastating than we even thought it could be.
Well, we had it going to a Category 4, my company, from Sunday. And as a matter of fact, and my dad used to always say to me, if you have to tell somebody you said something, you must not have said it loud enough. But not everybody hears things a few days away. So it was actually, we put it out publicly with the Patriot Post, which is a conservative blog I do, Monday morning, telling people how bad it's going to be. But look, here's the thing with this storm, folks. The first thing is, this is not climate change or any evidence of it, okay? So you could see this coming. You could see the whole pattern coming. And back, we talked to Sean on the 16th of September. I said, I'll be seeing you again in October, probably because of a big Gulf storm, right?
Now you said it right on the show, I know.
Yeah, right on the show. And you could see the pattern setting up for this. Everything got together, and that's why, and you see that every once in a while. But let me put it in perspective. This is the worst storm ever to hit between Mobile and Tampa that I can find on records. Okay? Now, whether 10,000 years ago something hit worse. So I'm not going to sugarcoat that. But on the other hand, it's not because of your SUV. All right? This is what nature is capable of doing. And you could see this pattern setting up pretty far in advance. It's also one of only a handful of storms in the last 25 years, including Harvey, by the way, that hit at its peak. Andrew did that. Camille did that. Irma wasn't at its peak when it came into Florida. It was weakening off its peak. Most of these hurricanes, and we've been blessed, they're not like the 30s, 40s, and 50s that hit on their peak. Now, as far as the storm, it made landfall as a borderline Category 5. And when it's all done, they may call it a Category 5. I'm not sure. They're going to have to go in and look at the damage. But there's a lot more left to this storm, folks. Because even though it's weakening, hurricane-force winds are going to go all the way into central Georgia. Not going to be gusting to 175, but they're going to be gusting to 80, 90, 100 miles an hour. Atlanta, you will escape the worst of this. But Augusta, it's probably going to come right over Augusta, very close to Columbia, South Carolina, just north of Fayetteville by this time tomorrow when we're talking. And then it will move off the mid-Atlantic coast between Cape Hatteras and Norfolk, Virginia, very late Thursday night, on out to sea to the south of New England, just be a glancing blow in the I-95 corridor. In the meantime, for you folks in the Carolinas, All right, you're not going to have the kind of prolonged siege, but in a 6 to 12 hour period, for much of the interior Carolinas, there are going to be winds gusting to 40, 50, 60 miles an hour. That's going to cause power outages. 3 to 6, locally, 12 inches of rain will aggravate flooding situations in areas that were devastated by Florence. I'm sorry to say that. We got to call it like it is as this comes through tomorrow into tomorrow night. So it's a multifaceted storm. With this part, Sean, as you can definitely see, it's a wind, a storm surge. There's tremendous rains right now. I pray to God that nobody stayed in the path of this. You know, this whole thing, I don't know if anybody ever read what happened in Camille in 69, where they tried to get these people to evacuate Pastor Christian, and the storm leveled a 3-foot apartment building. So I'm praying that people got out of there and they heeded the warnings. You know, the president has been awesome with this. FEMA has been absolutely spectacular in this rough period we've been going through over the past couple of years. And if they listen, well, you come back and rebuild later. But, I fear for people who stayed in the way of this.
Well, I do, too. That's why I always tell people, just listen to authorities. I know people have stayed because I'm looking and seeing online and various media sites, social sites. People are literally live streaming the hurricane, and some of them are even on the beach for crying out loud. Meaning,
well, they're probably live streaming away from the center, because I don't think anybody's live streaming where this thing's a bulldozer, about 20-mile-wide bulldozer, wherever it's coming in directly. It looks like Panama City was on the west side of the eye wall, and yeah. I guess it's Port St. Joe. It's going to be, I fear for that area in there.
Well, you called it perfectly. You said Panama City was ground zero. It was. And you also talked about the direction that this storm would hit. You were right about that, which, as you predicted yesterday and the day before and ever since Sunday, that the angle at which the storm was coming in made it that much more devastating.
Yeah, again, it's different from Florence. Florence did not come in at her peak. This came in all guns blazing as far as intensity goes. And it's one of these cases where everything came together, but you could see it coming together even back on Saturday and Sunday. As you know, I send that email out so you could plan the show and see what's going to go on this week. I've got some good news for you. We're not going to be talking about any more hurricanes this year hitting the United States once we're done with this one.
This is it. This is going to be the last one of the season.
The last impact storm on our coast. Yes, I believe that.
You know, why it's so important that we put you on and you have this incredible encyclopedic knowledge of every hurricane that's ever hit the United States, for crying out loud. But more importantly, with the knowledge that you have, you can impart that knowledge to our audience and you can save people's lives. Because, you know, think about, you know, the years before media, we had meteorologists and the ability, satellite imaging, for example, and the ability to actually track and follow these storms. And all of a sudden people will wake up and they're in a Category 4 or 5 hurricane and they had no idea where it came from.
The 38 hurricane, you know, you lived out on Long Island and legendary there. Those people had no idea what was coming. And
hey, Joe,
came.
I'm old, but I'm not that old. I wasn't there for the 38 hurricane in Long Island, okay? I
know,
I wasn't here.
It's legendary out there, maybe when you were a kid.
It is.
Long Island, too.
Well, I saw Hurricane Gloria destroy my sister's house, so I did watch that, and it hit pretty hard back in the day. But, all right, Joe Bastardi, weatherbell.com. We'll have the very latest. He'll be joining us tonight on Hannity as we get updates. Let not your heart be troubled. I know a lot of you are going to have a lot of damage. You're going to be in need of food and water, medicine, baby formula, cots, blankets. I know that, like in past hurricanes, that the government has gotten their act together. They pre-positioned a lot of the supplies that you will be needing. I know a lot of you are going to be very devastated by the loss of your homes, et cetera, but the American people are the most generous on earth, and any help we can give you, I know that will be available as soon as this thing passes. I pay attention to those that are in Augusta heading up to Columbia, South Carolina, because that's going to be in your area tomorrow with 80 to 100 mile per hour winds. That's pretty devastating. All right, let's get to our busy telephones here as we say hi to Reese is in Charleston, South Carolina. Reese, hi. How are you? Glad you called.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for taking my calls. I'll be brief. We're just calling in. I'm wondering what the possibility of getting the president to either direct or suggest to the DOJ that we go after these false accusers, whether it be the DNC, Hillary, Mrs. Ford, if not for a criminal part, but for the civil part and the cost of the wild goose chases that they were sent on trying to investigate these things from FISA and so on and so forth, and then strengthen the laws against false accusations because they ruin people's lives.
Oh, I never said this, but you really think about it. All of that information was disseminated to the American people, to lie to the American people, to feed them propaganda misinformation so that they'd vote a certain way. But more importantly, then after the election that they lost, in spite of all of these efforts, all of the lying that kind of always takes place, when and that's what the Democratic Party does every 2 and 4 years, in spite of all of that, then they use this phony information again and again and again, have a media leak strategy, feeding information from one source to multiple sources to seem like it's a real story when it was a concocted story, a scam, if you will. And that creates an atmosphere where everybody calls for a special counsel. And now we're discovering that people were talking about, well, some in the FBI now admitting that they had no evidence of Russian collusion at all. That's why they disseminated the information. That's why they leaked it to their friends in the media that were willing, you know, accomplices in all of this. And then they talk about undoing a presidential election, surreptitiously going out and recording the president unbeknownst to him so that they can then invoke the 25th Amendment. And then I guess the whole insurance policy is in place, done and finished. I mean, that's what happened here.
Yes, sir. And all these things are, again, being paid for by the taxpayer. And we're basically taking it in the rear end every time they do this.
All true. There's and unfortunately, you know, when I say this is the biggest abuse of power, scandal, corruption in American history, I am 1,000% right. And we still haven't gotten it right. There's a reason Rod Rosenstein does not want to testify, have the information recorded or do it under oath. Because he knows he's up to his eyeballs in every aspect of all of this. And yet he's the guy that has all the power. I mean, it's amazing. He's in the literally the eye of the hurricane, if you will. All right, Reese, thank you. Appreciate it. Let us go to James in Cleveland. James, how are you? Glad you called.
I am fantastic, Sean. Thank you for asking. First of all, I'd like to give my thoughts and prayers to everybody on the coast going through the hard times down there. Hopefully everybody does the right thing and plays it safe and got out of there while I was safe. But the reason I called actually is because I wanted to tell you that I was a never Trumper back in 2016, and I have completely changed my whole point of view on that. I didn't think he was electable, and I didn't think he was conservative back then, and I was wrong. In fact, I lost a $100 bet with a fellow employee of mine over it, paid him up the next day. But pretty much since day one, I've been defending his actions. The president has done a fantastic job. He has helped my family and myself so much. I can remember three things in my entire life that I've noticed the federal government actually do for me. First was the Bush tax cut. And now this fabulous cut from the GOP and Trump this time around has put so much money in my pocket. The other thing that affected me was when my Cadillac plan was canceled because of the ACA and Obamacare, and it's cost me $9,000 out of pocket since my company dumped our Cadillac plan.
Wow.
So thank you, Democrats, for that, and thank you, Republicans, for giving me more money in my pocket.
You know, I'm glad you said all of that, because there are a lot of people out there that are still in never-Trumper land, and they won't recognize. Look, I can understand that they don't like the president's style. It's maybe that it's at odds with how they would manage things, but you cannot argue that he's governing as a strong conservative that gets results. And I'll take results over rhetoric any day. And I wish some of the other people that were in your camp would be as intellectually honest as you are, and I applaud you for doing so. And I'm glad you're doing well. I'm glad your family's doing well. All right, that's going to wrap things up for today. Hannity tonight, 9 Eastern on the Fox News Channel. We'll have the very latest on Hurricane Michael, the hardest, the toughest hurricane ever to smash the Florida panhandle. We'll update you on where it's headed. Also, 27 days to Election Day. We've got Newt Gingrich. We have Devin Nunes is going to weigh in on the issue of Rod Rosenstein refusing to testify under oath after three people, Lisa Page, Andrew McCabe, and James Baker, all say that he talked about surreptitiously taping the president of the United States and maybe invoking the 25th Amendment. We'll get into that. It's on Hannity on Fox News. Hope you'll join us. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Thanks for being with us.